Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning, November 7th. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 right here on WLIW 88.3 FM. And you can hear us live online on WLIW.org. Just hit the radio tab and go to the upper left-hand side, see Sports Interview, and hit that, and voila, you can hear us live online from anywhere. And each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com, so you can hear it anytime, and distributed on my Sports Interview podcast on Audio Boom. Well, what a big week in the golf world coming up. This year's Masters will be played starting next Thursday, November 12 through 15. The Masters in November? That's a first, for sure. The championship has always been contested in April. The only years there was not a Masters was back in 43, 44, and 1945 during World War II. And turkey and cattle were raised on the grounds of Augusta National during those years to help the war effort. Little piece of information for you. And construction of this course, for a little history, began back in 1931 when Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts took a $70,000 option on the property. It was a nursery. They called it Fruitland Nursery at the time, 365 acres. And in 1932, Augusta National opened, and the formal opening was in January of 1933. So we go way back with this golf course and the history. So what's going to be different with a November Masters? Well, Augusta National has added some pretty exciting coverage to the championship this year. They're actually going to air ESPN's College Game Day for the first time ever. It's going to be broadcast live from Augusta National Golf Course on this Saturday, November 14th, prior to CBS broadcasting the third round. They're actually going to be located at Ike's Pond and the ninth green of the par three course. So what an incredible setting for this College Game Day show. And, you know, they're going to probably bring in this whole new audience and get college football fans very excited about switching to CBS when the third round begins later in the afternoon on Saturday. And it's really going to be great. I mean, Alabama will be at LSU. That's the big game scheduled for that Saturday at 6 p.m. on CBS, which will happen right after coverage of the third round. Remember, it gets darker in November, and so, you know, the times will be different. In fact, you can watch Masters coverage on Thursday and Friday on ESPN from 1 to 5:30. And then CBS will take over the weekend coverage from 1 to 5 p.m. on Saturday. And on Sunday, the final round, 10 a.m. to 3. So they're really going to start earlier than expected, obviously because of, sundown, and it gets darker earlier. And so you'll be seeing a little different formats, particularly on Thursday and Friday. You're going to see players teeing off on both the first hole and the 10th hole, and it will start earlier. Coverage of the final round will start earlier on Saturday and Sunday. You'll also be able, through their Masters Digital, you'll be able to put together what they call a My Group feature, where you can basically build your own personalized feed of every shot from your favorite players. So you can watch everything that your favorite player, every hole, every shot of your favorite player, which is really cool. Of course, Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player will be the honorary starters, and they will be out there on Thursday morning before play begins, again, on the first and tenth tees in both in two waves, the first two rounds. All right, how will the Masters be different in November than in April when it's normally played? Well, of course, there will be no patrons this year. And, you know, the spectators are such a huge part of the Masters. With no spectators, I think, you know, the silence is going to be deafening, because one of the highlights of watching the Masters is hearing the roars, whether you're on the course or watching it on TV. hearing the roars of great shots and birdies, and it's not going to be like that at all this year with no patrons there. So that'll be interesting, and I'm sure the players will feel that. Maybe some players won't be as nervous, some of the younger players, but the veterans who thrive on the roar of the crowds and that excitement and electricity, it's really going to make a big difference. The temperatures next week in Augusta are going to be more on the warm side. Normally, you don't know where you're going to get in November. It could be in the 70s. It could be in the 40s. But the forecast already is calling for temperatures in the 70s. The wind could be different in your face coming out of the north. So it could be in your face starting with hole number one. And on the par fives, the guys could be hitting most likely against the wind, which will make the holes even longer. The fairways could be a bit slower. Basically, Augusta National oversees the Bermuda in the fairways with perennial rye, and the rye needs a lot of water to grow. So again, this would favor the long bombers if it's softer, because you're not going to get as much roll on the ball. But again, you know, the Augusta can do anything, right? So they're going to have this course in as good a shape and playing as tough as it can play, like it normally does in April, in November. So they'll be able to figure it out and overcompensate for any of the differences that you would normally see with a November temperature and with the way they maintain the course. All right, well, which holes played the hardest last year? Just for all you golf junkies out there, last year it was the fifth hole, 495-yard fifth hole. The tee box was moved back, which made it an uphill carry of more than 310 yards over the bunkers. Players had to hit further right, and that lengthened the distance to the dogleg left green. The hole had an average score of 4.3355 last year. The second hardest hole was the par 4 10th, followed by the par 4 11th. And then, of course, the hole that gets most of the attention is the 510-yard par 5 13th. The tee shot has to be placed right to left, and that second shot is normally on a very tight side hill lie. And then, you know, you have to decide, are you going to lay up or go for the green in two? You have to go over Ray's Creek to that small green. Most of the players now can go for it in two. But when it was originally designed, Bobby Jones called it one of the finest holes for competitive play he's ever seen. In 2017, Augusta National purchased property behind the 13th tee that belonged to Augusta Country Club. And they can lengthen that hole from, 30 to 60 yards, moving the tees back. But they have yet to really make any changes on the infamous par 5 13th. The powers that be at Augusta National said last year they're taking a wait-and-see approach. The USGA and the RNA are publishing a Distance Insights project report. It has not been finalized yet. It was supposed to come out last year, but because of COVID, they've extended the date of when this Distance Insights project report is going to be published. And apparently, Augusta National is waiting to read the insights in that book to decide what to do. And again, it brings up, you know, Bryson DeChambeau and his incredible length now that he's bulked up and he's just crushing the ball longer than ever. It will be interesting to see what they do after this tournament and how these long bombers really approach the golf course and score, because a lot of people say that it's really, making this golf course too easy for these long hitters. So that brings me to the next subject. Who are the favorites to win Augusta? Well, Bryson DeChambeau, with his impressive U.S. Open win at Wingfoot in September, I mean, the guy was unbelievable. He was the only player in the entire field to break par, carding the 367 in the final round. He was 6-under overall for the championship. He won by 6 shots, yet he only hit 23 fairways in regulation. But he ended up with short iron shots into most of the par fours and the long par five ninth. And Bryson DeChambeau recently tweeted that he carried a drive 400 yards with a ball speed of 211 miles an hour. So that's pretty scary. And if he does that at Augusta National, it's going to be, short wedges to the greens, which will clearly be an advantage for Bryson DeChambeau. Patrick Reed is another player that I feel has another shot. He won the Masters in 2018, and he was leading the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, showing off just a flawless game for 2 days, and then he ended up finishing tied for 13th. He struggled in there, that high rough that they had at Wingfoot, but he definitely has the all-around game that it takes to win another Masters title. His short game and putting can be just incredible. So along with Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed is one of my favorites. And then I'll give you a third pick, Xander Schauffele. He seems to get into contention a lot at tournaments, but has, you know, doesn't close the doors as much as his talented would warrant. Last year at the Masters, Xander finished tied for second. This year at the U.S. Open, he was fifth. He has that complete game as well. He's very consistent. He's straight off the tee. He just has to put it together, and maybe at this Masters will be the time. So my three picks are Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, and Xander Schauffele. Tiger Woods, five-time Masters winner and defending champion. He knows that course better than anyone out there. He still has the length needed, and if his putting game is sharp, you can never count him out, but he has not been playing enough to defend his Masters title. He really only entered, six events leading up to the U.S. Open. He did not play well at the Zozo Championship at the end of October. I don't think the Tiger is going to repeat as Masters champ. He just hasn't played enough. Phil Mickelson, he's played a lot more than Tiger Woods. He has two victories on the Champions Tour. Phil was 76th at the Zozo Championship. Phil, three-time Masters champion, but I don't think he's going to win another one. Dustin Johnson is playing this week in Houston, his first tournament back since he tested positive for COVID. DJ, the number one ranked player in the world, reigning FedEx Cup champion, but he's been off for a while because of COVID, so I'm not sure if he'll be match sharp enough to win the Masters. Patrick Cantlay, he won the Zozo Championship at the end of October. He can putt. His iron play is really good. Tyrrell Hatton, he's been hot. Rory McIlroy needs a Masters title to complete a career Grand Slam. But I just think that fact puts too much pressure on himself to win a Masters, and he has not won any major championship in 6 years. I'd love to see Rory win a Masters to complete a career Grand Slam, but I'm just not confident that that would happen this time around. Justin Thomas, he has it all. So talented. He just has to put it all together at Augusta. Justin Thomas is right in there. There's just so many players. Brooks Koepka is making only his second start this week since returning from an injured left knee. He was the guy to beat in the majors just, a year and a half ago? Yet we have no idea how his knee will hold up. And, you know, since he hasn't been playing, I just can't believe he's going to be as sharp as he needs to be to win the Masters. But you never know. Brooks Koepka is just incapable of doing anything. He's just incredible. John Rahm hits it long and straight. It could be his time at Augusta National. He tied for second recently at the Zozo Championship last week. He won the Memorial. He was fourth at the Masters in 2018. He knows how to play there, and he's capable of winning. Colin Morikawa, the young player who won the PGA Championship. He missed the cut at the U.S. Open, though. He's placed 50th at the Zozo Championship. I just don't think he's been playing his best since winning the PGA Championship in San Francisco. So even though I think he's so talented, I don't think it's going to be his time yet at Augusta National. Well, we'll continue to talk about picks and everything else concerning the Masters. We'll talk with Brad Klein, veteran golf course architecture writer and consultant, about how Augusta National will play in November compared to April, when this prestigious championship is normally played. Brad knows golf design and history, and I think you'll find his comments just so insightful. Then I will replay an interview I did with the legendary Gary Player, who with Jack Nicklaus will be the honorary starter yet again to kick off this very unique Masters this coming Thursday morning. Gary talks about Jordan Spieth, who won the Masters back in 2015. He also offers strong opinions on five-time Masters champion and defending champion Tiger Woods. It's always a pleasure to hear what the great Gary Player has to say. Sports Interview with Anne Ligori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. Dune, D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. Promo code AL2020. And Sports Interview with Anne Ligori is brought to you by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peak Vision, P-E-A-K Vision.com.
Hi, this is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to 88.3 WLIW-FM, Long Island's only NPR station.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Ligori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Brad Klein, veteran golf course architecture writer and consultant and longtime colleague of mine in the golf biz. Hey, Brad, welcome to Sports Interview.
I can't believe it's fall and we're waiting on the Masters next week. It is so weird, but then everything has been weird this year.
I know. Talk about like weirdness all the way around. So let's get right to it. Let's talk Masters as this championship is set to begin on Thursday, a November Masters. What are your overall thoughts about having this prestigious championship in November?
It's going to be very weird. I think it's going to be weirder than watching the U.S. Open at Wingfoot without spectators, because we're all accustomed to that wonderful ritual of the roars and down at Amen Corner and the spectators going nuts and the players, you know, hitting the backgrounds and shots and the beautiful azaleas and the flowering plants. All that's going to be kind of monotone. It's going to be green. It's probably going to be a little cooler. Might even be wetter if the forecast holds up. And there won't be anybody out there except, you know, the players and maybe the guys holding the score, you know, the scores for each group. But that's it. So it's going to be a very it'll really hit home when they get to the 12th hole, that little par three in the corner. So it's going to be not as colorful, not as loud, not as much of the Masters. But it's, you know, by Sunday afternoon, it'll probably rev up and it'll have that drama that it seems to have every year.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, you know, I've been covering the Masters 22 straight years, and to cover a championship with no patrons, whether it's, you know, the U.S. Open or the Open Championship or the PGA, whatever, it's just so weird without spectators. But at Augusta National, because of the way it's set up and because, you know, the whole place erupts and echoes when, you know, somebody makes a birdie or when somebody makes a great shot, you know, it's just going to be so quiet on the hallowed grounds at Augusta National. So I'm wondering how this may affect the players and you know, the veterans, the champions love the noise. They love to hear the roars. Maybe some of the, you know, the younger players won't be as nervous because they don't have, you know, the rows and rows of patrons watching. What do you think about how the lack of spectators, the lack of the patrons, as they call them at Augusta National, how will that affect the players, do you think?
Well, you know, some of the ritual won't be there. They're not even going to have the Wednesday afternoon par three event this year. And, you know, it's going to be an event. I think you're right. I think it's going to help a first-time player. I think it's going to help someone who is more comfortable in their own skin, you know, a quieter guy like Patrick Cantlay, for example, might have and someone who's, or a Tyrrell Hatton, he may end up wearing a hoodie, by the way. It would be funny to watch.
But, oh, my. Yeah. That's some sacrilege at Augusta National.
Well, I don't know if there's a dress code that's part of the local rule there. So, in that sense, you know, I think Tiger would be more comfortable with a lot of people there. I think Mickelson would be, Garcia. I think Bryson DeChambeau would be more comfortable. But, you know, they're professionals. They have a great capacity to reduce everything to their own little cocoon in their brains and in their, with their caddies. And so they'll all adjust, but it will not feel the same for viewers. I think that's going to be the harder sensibility to accommodate. And,
sure,
and by the way,
you know,
they're not going to sell as much merchandise.
Well, here's line. Okay. Two things about that. I already got the email that I could go to the website. If you are a credential holder or a patron, a ticket holder from the past, you had to fill out, you know, a form, put in your email, and they sent you the website where you could go and purchase 2020 Masters products and memorabilia. And some of it, you know, they have the gnome that's dressed up in a Santa outfit. Some of it is really more collectible items because of, you know, the novelty of having the Masters in November as opposed to April. So I went on right away and I did a lot of my Christmas shopping, let's just put it that way. So they are going to sell, I think, a lot of merchandise online. And another interesting development with this Masters being held in November, Brad Klein, is that ESPN Game Day is going to be broadcasting on the grounds of Augusta National, which kind of shows me that Augusta National is really trying to change with the times. Obviously, college football season, they're going to do it on the Saturday, and it's going to lead into you know, the coverage of the third round, and then after that third round, you're going to have a, you know, college football game. And just to have ESPN Game Day on the premises there, that's going to be outstanding, don't you think? Very different, though.
They're going to dress up in mascots? I got to tell you, though, I want to just say this. I'm a, when it comes to memorabilia and accessories and all sorts of stuff, I'm a purist. I don't think you should be allowed to wear a hat for a golf course you haven't been on. And I just don't think the merchandise is as valuable emotionally when you buy it online as when you, there's nothing like that rush toward the merchandise mart at Augusta National and the way it operates and the efficiency, and, you know, it just zooms right through. And so to me, that's, we're going to miss that as well. So just one of those
things. I know, totally different. But anyway, let's talk about the differences with the Masters being held in November rather than in April, as you know, in terms of how do you think the course is going to be. I looked at the temperature, the forecast, it's going to be in the 70s, which actually you never know what you're going to get weather-wise, you know, down there in November, but it's going to be warmer. They might have some rain. But you know, I've read some articles where it says the wind is going to be a north wind, and that means it's going to, the players may have the wind against on the first hole and on a couple of the par fives.
It's interesting. I hadn't looked at that. I'm always a little, what's the word, suspicious about that. But in terms of, you know, weather is so variant, but if that's the case, a north wind will play against the players on 8, the uphill 5 par. It'll play straight downwind on 2, and it'll be a crosswind on right to left crosswind on 13 and 15. Now, the big difference, of course, is not so much that. The weather's going to be a little different. Even if the temperatures get into the 70s, they're not going to get into the 80s. It's going to be cooler in the morning. And you're losing 2.5 hours of sun, 2 hours and 20 minutes of sunlight. So the afternoons are going to be chill. This lower sun angle means that the golf course won't dry off quite as much, because any moisture in the morning, if there's rain or if they do any irrigation, it's not going to dry off as fast, because the sun won't get above the tree line. You have those conifers, those have permanent leaves, so to speak, or coverage, you know, so that it's going to hide the sun a little bit. So it's going to be a little cooler even in the morning, and a little wetter, and a little bit marginally slower. The overseed will be fully established. So the idea that ryegrass isn't fully developed, the overseeded ryegrass, I don't think that's true. And then, of course, the big difference, which we haven't gotten to, was a guy named Bryson DeChambeau, who's added 20 yards to his average drive this year. And so I think the most interesting thing, and I wrote about this on, for the website, Morning Reed, sure. They're going to be turning some of these par fives, particularly the 2nd, the 13th, and the 15th, into drive and wedge par fives. And that's going to be weird to watch. So to me, the really interesting thing is the potential, and of course, it's not just Bryson DeChambeau, but it's Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas and John Rahm and all these players who have added yardage, worked harder on their swings and increased their RPM, and Xander Schauffele, for example. So it's going to be very interesting to see the clubs they hit into these holes. The golf course is about 7480. But par 72, to me, the real issue is you give par 72, the whole field is 8 under before they start for the week. They average 4.6 on the par fives. They basically birdie one out of every two. They're going to be hitting, some of them are going to hit short irons into the 2nd hole. That's going to be, they're going to catch the crest and run down and be within 220 yards of that hole. They'll be hitting 6, 7, 8 irons into that hole, which is new. So,
right. I know you recently wrote about this. As you mentioned in Morning Read, the article is titled, Can Augusta National Withstand the Onslaught?
Yeah.
You know, can it? Is it making Augusta National completely outdated, in your opinion?
Well, I do think it's making any par 72 course on the PGA Tour that's only 7,400, that's under 7,500 yards. They are, I wouldn't say obsolete, but they don't provide the strategic challenge that they used to. So, now, Augusta is not going to change par 72. Historically, that's been the standard. They've been playing that. You know, you'd hate to tell all of a sudden make the 15th hole into a 4-par because you can't then match or compare the shots you hit now with what Gene Sarazen did when he made double eagle to tie Craig Wood back in 1935. I think I covered that for Golf Week, by the way, back then.
DeChambeau, he missed a high percentage of fairways when he won the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. He only hit, 23 fairways. Now, if he misses that many fairways at Augusta National, don't you think he's going to be more penalized? Obviously, he had to come out of the deep rough at Wingfoot. But in your opinion, how much more important is it for these long bombers to be more accurate off the tee at Augusta National?
Not at all. So a couple of things. And you raised some very good points, as usual. DeChambeau at Wingfoot hit slightly above the average for the field for the week, 23 fairways for the week. That's only four or five fairways. What is it? It's under six fairways around. That's his winning total of 23 fairways was the lowest total in the last 40 years of anyone who's won an Open. It was enough there because those fairways were fairly narrow. Everybody was missing fairways. At Augusta National, the fairways are 50 yards wide, and there's no real rough. There's a light, you know, half an inch, well, maybe an inch thicker in the rough. The fairways are probably 0.4 inches. The approaches are cut to 1/4 inch. The rough might be, what they call first cut. I have to be careful, of course. It's about an inch and a quarter, maybe an inch and a half. But they're miles wide, so accuracy is never the issue there. And it's a power game now down there. If you can get a short iron in your hand to the greens that were designed for a 5 and 6 iron, you have a tremendous advantage. So
I agree. I mean, you do have the pine trees. You have the tall pines. You have the pine needles. I mean, you obviously have much wider fairways to deal with, but, you still can't be completely, off the course, with your tee shot. He has the short game and the if it's obviously you have to make the putts. So he has to balance everything out. But one thing that was interesting that I took from your article was that if you can hit it over a certain distance, like I think you said between 320 and over 320 or 330, you're likely to get that forward roll and even more distance. So I think that's where it really comes into an advantage for these long hitters, because if you get past those bunkers, as you mentioned, on holes 1, 2, 5, 8, and I think 18, then 18, you're uphill. But on a lot of these holes, you're going to get even that forward roll.
Well, there's a little bit of a flat spot beyond the bunkers on 18 as well. So here's the thing. The key is Augusta National, brilliant routing by McKenzie and Bobby Jones. It's basically high point of a tee to a high point where the fairway is to a high point where the green is. And in between, it dips down. So if you can carry to the top of the or the apex of the fairway, it often shoots forward beyond into the low dip in between that point and the green. That's the first hole. It's the second hole. It's the fifth hole. It's the 10th hole for sure, which is downhill all the way. And even on 18, you get it above a certain point, and the fairway flattens out before it shoots uphill again. The other thing is that, and those carry points are all about 320 off the back tee. The other thing is when they redesigned the bunkers, and Tom Fazio rebuilt them a few years ago, all the bunkers are effectively 330 yards off the back tee to carry. If you get it past the bunker on 8, the par 5, it's going to shoot forward to some extent. If you get it past the bunker on 2, it's going way down the hill. Same thing on 1, down the hill. Same thing on 5, way down the hill. So the long hitter gets a turbo boost advantage there, and that's because those courses were never designed or anticipated for 330-yard drives. They figured the average drive, you know, when I caddied on the tour in the late 70s, early 80s, the average drive was 250, 255. It carried about 240. Would have gotten you to the top of the hill. And on the first hole, you're hitting 6-iron and 7-iron. And now they're all hitting 8 and 9 wedges. So the differences in terms of how the ball and equipment and the player scale, all of those have evolved, have changed how Augusta presents challenges to the modern contemporary player. It's not doesn't affect as much the average golfer, but it affects the college golfer, the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour players dramatically. So that's
and of
what
course
we're
with Bryson play. With Bryson DeChambeau tweeting out that he drove the ball over 400 yards carry with a 40-inch drive, not even with a 48-inch driver. It'll be interesting to see if that actually takes place at Augusta National. I wonder
it's going to be interesting to watch if he shows up with a 48-inch driver. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Do you wonder if Tiger Woods is impressed with DeChambeau? With, you know, obviously Tiger at one point, you know, was the one that everybody was just blown away by, you know, the length of his drives. And now he gets blown away by so many other guys who, you know, are younger and playing obviously more regularly. But do you think Tiger is impressed with DeChambeau's length?
He won't admit it, but of course. Now, you know, but Tiger was doing the same thing back in 97 when he won. When he won the Masters in 97 and broke through with that great victory, he never hit more than a 7-iron into a 4-par. And that was revolutionary. So they've added 400 or 500 yards to the course, and now everybody's hitting 6-7. Well, they're hitting 8-irons, 9-irons into 4-pars now. Tiger, I think, is enough of a fan of the history of the game to know that it evolved. I think the difference is he does not have, this is not a criticism, it's just an observation of where he is physically. He doesn't have the reserve RPM in his body to generate that kind of speed. And now he has to rely upon more of a wily, strategic shot-making game and short game and recovery. But that's hard to do. You know, now Zach Johnson did it. You can do it at Augusta National. Immelman did it a few years ago. Zach Johnson did it when he laid up on all the 5-pars. So the course allows for it, but boy, you better be on your game, and you're up against a lot. So it's going to be very, very interesting to watch this play out. And part of the reason is that Augusta National, the Masters, is the only tournament in the world, really, where we could imagine them declaring a tournament ball one year. They could probably do it. What are you going to do? People are going to sit out because it's a tournament ball?
So, exactly.
You know, I laid out, if they wanted to, and they wanted to spend all the money, they got enough land out there. They've acquired all this land. They could actually move a lot of holes and dramatically change that golf course and make it into 8,100 yards. I don't think they will, but they could.
Right. I know. They obviously purchased that land behind the tee on the par 5 13.
They were saying, they were kind of taking a wait and see attitude. I know Fred Ridley said last year that they wanted to see, you know, what the golf community comes out with, you know, whatever this book is they're waiting for to come out,
the USGA,
you know, with,
with
the USGA and the RNA.
Distance
so do you think report. They're going to, do you think they're going to temper with the golf course to deal with the long hitters?
Well, I'm surprised that they haven't introduced the new tee on 13. They bought a 5-acre parcel from Augusta Country Club for $23 million. And they could easily add 50 to 60 yards to the 13th hole, which I think would be great. It would restore the integrity of the drive and bring that arm of Rays Creek into play on the left side. And you'd have to work the ball. And I'm surprised they haven't. They could do it easily. If they don't, they're not going to do it this year, but they might well do it in time for 2021, which is only, by the way, 6 months away.
Right, so. I know, right? Yes, I know. The book I was looking for, the report, the USGA and the RNA are publishing what they're calling a Distance Insights Project Report. And apparently the powers to be at Augusta National are kind of taking a wait-and-see approach to see what is published in this report. Are they going to, you know, do anything? Will they change the ball? Will they put any regulations, you know, with any technology? Will... You know, what will Augusta National do? That's the big question.
Well, I got to tell you, I wrote up that report for the USGA Golf Journal this year. When that report came out in February, they asked me to write kind of a summary for the USGA Golf Journal. I read it very carefully. They had promised in there, it's a very preliminary sense of the distance issue and the factors that contribute to the longer drives on the at Elite Golf. They promised a follow-up in the spring of 2021. That's been put on the back burner, so to speak, because of COVID. So any anticipated moves by the combined USGA, RNA are going to await, you know, more time. And nothing, I'm convinced, nothing will be done or issued by the USGA and RNA before the 2021 Masters. So,
wow. Okay. So, all right. So what do you think they should do? If it were you making the call at Augusta National, what would you do, Brad?
Well, I believe in bifurcation. I believe that it's already a different game. When you swing in 115, 120, or Bryson DeChambeau, 132 miles an hour, and you have the launch monitors and you have that kind of skill and you're dealing with 1/100th of 1% of the golfers in the world, I think it's a, you know, they use aluminum bats in college. They don't use aluminum bats in the majors. So they have different rules in baseball. They have different rules in every sport. And I think they need to have different rules for the way the professional game is played. Now, it's an issue where, you know, do those same rules pertain to the amateur golf? They can figure that one out. It's not that complicated. But I think they need to have a ball that doesn't go as far or whose performance, what I would prefer, is a ball whose performance deteriorates above a certain RPM so that you would learn to kind of control its speed and steer it and maximize the performance. But beyond a certain velocity, you could design a dimple pattern where the performance deteriorates. So there's a lot they could do aerodynamically. I think the easiest control mechanism is the ball. I have no doubt that a big part of the changes in distance over the years has to do with the health, the training, the physical preparedness of these athletes, and their athletes now. Psychologically, they're more attuned. The training is better. The clubs are more consistent. The sweet spots are bigger. But the easiest thing to control is the ball, and that's what I would focus on.
Last question, because we're running out of time, Brad. Who are you picking to win the Masters?
DeChambeau, no question. I hope he shoots 40 under, actually.
He's the betting favorite for sure, and certainly a good pick by anybody for sure with his distance.
Well, it's the easy pick. But, you know, it's hard to remember. Tiger Woods has been defending champion at Augusta for 18 months now. We kind of forgot all how great that last Masters were. And you know what? For all this discussion on distance, that Masters was decided on the 12th hole when five of the last six players dunked it in the water with a nine.
That's right. So that's right.
That's still the
beginning. Tiger just happened to use the right club with that wind. He was a smart guy. You know, he knows the course and the conditions so much, you know, so well that he played it so smart, and it was a magical win for Tiger for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brad,
and
thank
you so much.
We haven't seen
Molinari since.
That's true.
An amazing turn. We have not seen him challenge in a tournament. That was an amazing series of events that led to Tiger's winning. Great for golf and good for him.
Right. Well, of course, with COVID, we weren't going to see him too much this year, but hopefully he'll be back. He's enormously talented.
I never underestimate his potential.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Brad Klein, veteran golf course architecture, writer, and consultant. Thanks so much with your insights on the Masters, and we'll get you on another time soon to talk about everything else you're working on.
And we talked in 1993 at Baltus for All on radio, and I hope we don't have to wait 27 years for the next time.
Not a chance. We'll get you on a much sooner. Thanks so much.
You too. Enjoy.
Sports Interview with Anne Ligori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. Dune, D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. Promo code AL2020. And Sports Interview with Anne Ligori is brought to you by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peak Vision, P-E-A-K Vision.com.
Serving Eastern Long Island and coastal Connecticut, this is listener-supported 88.3 WLIW-FM and WLIW.org/radio, Long Island's only NPR station. Your source for news, music, and entertainment 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in Southampton, New York.
I am here with the legendary Gary Player, winner of 9 major titles, 9 senior major titles, 165 tournaments around the world on 6 continents, over 7 decades, and the only non-American to complete a career Grand Slam. Gary, it is a pleasure to talk with you.
Nice to be talking to you, and I look forward to it.
Let's talk about some of the guys who are almost there completing a career Grand Slam. Rory McIlroy needs a Masters title.
He'll get
what
it.
Do you think?
Rory McIlroy has the best swing in the world today. He's a little inconsistent with his putting, but he will have the right putting week sometime at Augusta. I think he's destined to win Augusta. Jordan Spieth.
He needs a PGA
championship. Yeah, Jordan Spieth is so good for golf. So is Rory. Jordan Spieth, the All-American boy. He's a wonderful family man. I love him. But he has 3 faults in his swing that are hurting him. And every time I watch him, he's not getting rid of them. And he has not been playing well the last year. And it hurts me because I'd really like to see him. He could be number one. And the way his short game, nobody's got the short game he's got. He's got
right.
a short game, particularly if he plays reasonably well. But he hasn't been playing well. And so
yeah, he dropped down to the top 50. He won the U.S. Open and the Masters.
Yes.
Masters U.S. Open 2015, then the Open Championship in 2017. And, you know, he was just got out of the box.
I do think
so amazing.
When you have a 5-shot lead, I think he had a 5-shot lead with 7 holes to go to Augusta. And he made a 7 at the 12th. I think that hurt him for a while because I know I've been second by 1 shot in Augusta, and it does stay with you for a while. You've got to shake it off. But I think that hurt him for a while. But, you know, when you're playing in highly competitive sports like golf, you've got to have the right basic fundamentals, although you might have 4 guys trying the same basic fundamental, but they look different because of the arms are long and short, and et cetera, et cetera, and tall bodies and short bodies, wide shoulders, narrow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he's got to get rid of those 3 faults, and he's not. He will eventually. He will eventually, and then I hope he will. I pray he will. But I said the other day, it caused a lot of furor. I'd love to spend 1 hour with him, but that's, I don't want to insult his coach.
Right.
Because I have respect for his coach. But, you know, we can all do with help somewhere. But so be it. I mean, I'm not going to go there or discuss what he does wrong or interfere in his life. He's a man. He must go ahead and
keep
going.
Figure it out.
He has to figure it out.
How does one get over a slump? I mean, that's a general question. It's, I guess, different for everybody. But
you get over a slump by what Hogan said, the secret's in the dirt. And you just keep beating and working out things. And I'm against having a coach stand behind me every week. It's fine to have a coach. If the coach could play well himself and really understands the intricacies of it, I think a lot of pros might have coaches that are excellent coaches at a golf club and for an amateur, but when you get to that higher echelon, I don't know if they're actually capable of teaching to the extent that, say, Elite Trevino, for example, who's been in the arena, somebody like that.
Maybe Jordan just has to go someplace by himself and figure it out himself.
I don't know. I don't want to say any more about that. I have too much respect for him. But let's take the number one player in the world, Tiger Woods. He wins the US Open by 15 shots, and not 5 shots, which is remarkable. 15. The next week or so, he's having a lesson. And he never won a major for 11 years. Now, what did he have a lesson for? He had the most perfect golf swing.
Right.
In Florida, I had a picture of his swing, and I know what a good golf swing is. Because I've been with the best players in the world, and I've hit more balls than anybody, so I know the theory of golf. And I looked at Tiger Woods and I said, no wonder he's so good. Everything was in place. And all of a sudden, this guy's swing was so bad, he could hardly hit a fairway. And then he had another coach and he got worse.
Right.
So now common sense has prevailed and he's working it out himself as far as I know. And he's swinging well again. But the damage was done. And with all these other problems he had, without discussing them, but some of them were back operations and knee operations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, he just never fulfilled the potential that Tiger Woods should have done. He should have won at least 22 majors, at least 22. And it's sad because, you know, I love to see a man break records, and particularly to see an African-American do it, because I want to see golf go ahead in Africa and Asia and around the world, that it's not always a white man that does it. And so it's exciting time for me. And to see Singh play so well, and Lee Elder and Charlie Sevin, these guys, because we love the game. And I love to see a Japanese guy come over here and win, or a Chinese guy or a Chinese woman, because the golf is an international sport and we want to boost the sport in its entirety.
It would have been great. I mean, Tiger, obviously going through all those injuries and this personal scandal. What if all that didn't happen?
He would have
won
22 majors at least.
He would have beat Jack.
And if he
Nicholas
never went for another lesson, you couldn't be better than him. You couldn't get better than either. I understand that. He wanted to get even better. So he went for the help. But it was a mistake. And we all...
You're talking about changing a swing.
Yes,
as much
he should
as
never
he
have changed his swing.
But maybe he had to do it based on the back pain and the injuries.
Well, if you got back pain, you don't go to a golf pro to get rid of your back pain. You do it by either exercise, you do it by heat and cold, or you do it by seeing a back specialist, etc., etc. It's not a professional golfer's advice to give you on not having back pain.
So you question his swing changes.
Well,
the amount of times he's
changed. No, I do, because he changed to certain things in his swing that were wrong. They were wrong. From what I saw in his swing, and I know things in the swing that are bad. And what he changed, I saw things in the swing that were bad. And that's why the reason he couldn't hit it on a football field.
Fast forward, comes back, wins the Masters last year.
Yes.
Incredible transformation,
I was so happy. You see, I'm one of the honest ones. When they said to me, prior to his victories coming back, will he win another tournament? Will he win another major? I said, he won't even win another tournament in his life again, because I could see what was happening, and I could see the back problems and the knee problems. And I know when you've got a back problem, Oh, people don't understand when you're a professional golfer and you're hitting it hard what it means. So I just did the logical thinking. But I was honest, I didn't think so. When he won, there was nobody more happy than me. Because it did golf so much good. And the thing that was exciting for me with the Tiger won was it encouraged millions of people who have adversity in their lives to see a man who was right down low come back. That's what I admired, the fight back. And then secondly, his father was there to see him win the Masters, and his son was there to see him win the Masters.
And his daughter.
And his daughter. So that, to me, I was so, so excited about it.
The complete circle by Tiger Woods.
Yeah, yeah. And now, will he win another major? I'm going to say it in front of you on the camera. I don't think so. But I sure as hang hope so. Because as you get older, the pains get worse and things get tougher. And your nerve gets worse and your eyesight gets worse. Well, I won the Masters at 42. Jack Nicklaus won the Masters at 46. When I won the Masters at 42, I said, nobody will ever do that again at that age. And Jack won it at 46. So, nothing would surprise me with Tiger, and I would be elated if he wins. But I know how tough it is to win a major, and I know as you get older, particularly with back or knee, you know, with a back, you can go to touch your wife's hand like that, and your back will go like
right.
this. Or you can get in the
Very
shower
painful.
And take a towel, and you can be like that. You know, it could be just picking up that book. Oh, my back. You know, so it's a very, very precarious situation. But he, you see what he does exercise, which is vital, vital. And it's certainly one of the things, you know, I started weight training with golf in 1953 with a man called Frank Stranahan. We were ridiculed. Even the Golf Channel later on were talking about Tiger and Rory not playing well because they were lifting too heavy. Well, Tiger played his best, to come back to what I said, Tiger played his best when he was pumping the most. So, Tiger still keeps exercising. It's vital to keep exercising for your body because your body goes downhill from the age of round about 30.
Yeah, you almost have to exercise more as you get older.
Of course you do.
To be, you know,
I go to an airport, I don't take that escalator, I walk up the stairs, carry my briefcase. If I go and have a meeting and it's on the third floor, I don't take the escalator, I walk up. I may look at certain foods and I look at them and I see them and I say poison. When I see certain foods, I say that's poison. Don't eat it. I took an oath to God. I took an oath to God because I loved bacon and I loved ice cream, okay? I was an ice cream meme-aholic and crisp bacon. I could see I was getting more gout. I was getting, it was not good, made me feel nauseous. It was screaming at me, this is not good for you. You can maybe have bacon and ice cream and get away with it, but I couldn't. So I said, how am I going to stop? I took an oath to God never to have an ice cream or a piece of bacon again. That's 23 years ago. That's how I did it.
Good for you.
So you've got to make sacrifices. I'm not saying that everybody must not eat ice cream or bacon. I'm not trying to profess to be a great dietitian, although I know I can help a lot of people. But it's horses for courses.
My thanks to the great Gary Player, to Brad Klein, and to Delaney Heffner in the studio. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Enjoy the Masters. And I will talk to you next Saturday morning right here from 7 to 8 on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.